Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Ezekiel chapter 23, which I will entitle Two Prostitutes Named Ohola and Oholibah. Now, I'm actually going to do the first part of chapter 23, namely verses 1 through 23. We'll finish up this long chapter in the next audio. A little background as far as the time of the prophecy when it was given to Ezekiel. It was given in approximately the time between 591 and 589 B.C. It's given in the same year, actually, as the last chapter. In fact, the last several chapters. Chapters 8 through 19 were given between 592 and 590, and then chapters 20, 21, 22, and 23 the year after that, which is 591 to 589. How is that calculated? Because in one of the chapters it says the prophecy was given in the seventh year since the capture of Jehoiachin and the establishment of Zedekiah, which is in 597, when Jehoiachin was taken off to Babylon. 597 minus 7, you get 590. Put a year on either side of it just to be sure, and so you get 599 to 589 is when this prophecy was given. The exact date is not so important. What's important for context is that we see that this prophecy is just a few years before the Babylonian siege, the final siege, the big one, came. Nebuchadnezzar showed up in 588. Within 2 years, in 586, Jerusalem was a pile of smoldering ash. We begin now in Ezekiel 23, verses 1 through 4. The word of the Lord came to me, son of man. There were two women, daughters of the same mother. They became prostitutes in Egypt, engaging in prostitution from their youth. In that land, their breasts were fondled and their virgin bosoms caressed. The older was named Ohola, and her sister was Oholibah. They were mine and gave birth to sons and daughters. Ohola is Samaria, and Oholibah is Jerusalem. Samaria is the capital city of the northern kingdom of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, which were destroyed by Assyria in 722. The main tribe of the northern 10 tribes was Ephraim, and Samaria was the biggest city in Ephraim, and Samaria was the capital city of the northern 10 tribes. That's Ohola. Oholibah is the southern two tribes of Judah, the capital city of which was Jerusalem. Ohola means her own tabernacle, according to Ellicott. Oholibah, there's some options as to the meaning of the name. It literally means my tent or tabernacle is in her, thus referring to Jerusalem, because Oholibah is a symbol of Jerusalem in this little parable. Some people say that maybe Oholibah was the name of a real Egyptian whore, along with her sister Ohola. She might have been a real Egyptian whore. I don't think so. I think this is obviously symbolic. Some have even said that Oholibah is an allusion to the wife of Esau. We read in Genesis 36:2 that one of Esau's wives was Oholibamah, daughter of Anah, which is close to Oholibah, Oholibamah. I don't think so. Now, these two women were daughters of the same mother. That means they were sisters. Why are they called daughters of the same mother? Perhaps it's because they both came from Sarah, the wife of Abraham, because the 12 tribes did come from Sarah, 10 in the north, 2 in the south. Perhaps because the 10 tribes were originally one kingdom and nation, and therefore the two women are said to come from the same mother being the 12 tribes of Israel. The daughters of the 12 tribes are the northern 10 tribes and the southern 2 tribes. Now in verse 3, Ohola and Oholibah became prostitutes in Egypt from their youth. Now this means that they learned their idolatry in Egypt and carried it with them, because prostitution or sexual immorality is often used as a metaphor for spiritual prostitution, spiritual adultery, spiritual fornication, idolatry. So from the time that Israel was in Egypt, they were worshiping idols. They learned their idolatry in Egypt and carried it with them on the Exodus. In fact, they made and worshipped a golden calf on the Exodus in that famous incident. And many people say that that golden calf came from the ox god of Egypt. And of course, they were idolaters when they joined themselves to Baal of Peor, the god of the Moabites. That famous incident in Exodus 32 and Numbers 25 when Phinehas speared that Jewish man who was getting it on with an Amalekite woman who was in alliance with the Moabites, if I remember the details correctly. Now, in a previous chapter in Ezekiel, We went over a verse where it proved conclusively that Israel had done idolatry in Egypt and took it with them. And unfortunately, I've lost the reference. I didn't write it down, but I promise you it's there. They became prostitutes in Egypt. In that land, their breasts were fondled and their virgin bosoms caressed. Now, you know, Ezekiel is great at going into a lot of unnecessary detail. My gosh, this is the Bible, Ezekiel. How am I supposed to read this in church or in Sunday school when I'm teaching this? Especially if there are kids present. Well, Ezekiel doesn't care, does he? And it gets worse. When we get further on down in this audio, he's going to become quite graphic. Now, the NIV version says that the two women had their breasts fondled and their virgin bosoms caressed, but the KJV is even better. It says, there were their breasts pressed. There they bruised the tits of their virginity. They bruised the tits of their virginity. Now, what kind of a translation is that? I would love to run into a King James only person I could say, how dare you push a virgin on me that has they bruised the tits of their virginity in it. Am I supposed to read that to my children? What's the matter with you, you pervert? That ought to slow them down a little bit. Here's what John Gill says about that King James translation. The heathens made their breasts swell and increase, being impregnated by them. In other words, the women got pregnant, and women, when they get pregnant, their breasts get bigger as they lactate. And so that's what Gill says happened. I think, again, that's too much detail. We don't really care. The point is that northern Israel, Samaria, and southern Israel, Jerusalem, Judah, they're committing spiritual idolatry in Egypt. Now, in verse 4, we see that Aholah, who stands for Ephraim, the northern 10 tribes, she was older. Why is she said to be older than Aholibah, who stands for Judah, the southern two tribes? Well, option number one, Aholibah is younger and Aholah is older because Aholah, the older, the 10 tribes had more people, tribes, and money, and generally older people have more clout. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, on the other hand, that they believe that the northern 10 tribes are called older is because Samaria's destruction preceded Jerusalem's. Well, who knows? But at any rate, Ephraim, the northern 10 tribes, Aholah, are older. Both of them are said in verse 4 to belong to Yahweh. They were mine. They gave birth to sons and daughters. That means their population multiplied. And then we don't have to guess as to the allusion, because at the end of verse 4, Yahweh tells Ezekiel, Aholah is Samaria and Aholibah is Jerusalem, the two cities of the respective Jewish kingdoms. So we go now to Ezekiel 23, verses 5 through 13. Aholah, again, that's the northern 10 tribes. Aholah engaged in prostitution while she was still mine, and she lusted after her lovers, the Assyrians. Warriors clothed in blue, governors and commanders, all of them handsome young men and mounted horsemen. She gave herself as a prostitute to all the elite of the Assyrians and defiled herself with all the idols of everyone she lusted after. She did not give up the prostitution she began in Egypt, when during her youth men slept with her, caressed her virgin bosom, and poured out their lust upon her. Therefore I handed her over to her lovers, the Assyrians, for whom she lusted. They stripped her naked, took away her sons and daughters, and killed her with the sword. She became a byword among women, and punishment was inflicted on her. Her sister Aholibah, remember that's Jerusalem and the two southern tribes of Judah, her sister Aholibah saw this, yet in her lust and prostitution she was more depraved than her sister. She too lusted after the Assyrians, governors and commanders, warriors in full dress, mounted horsemen, all handsome young men. I saw that she too defiled herself. Both of them, that means both Aholibah and Aholah, both of them went the same way of lust and idolatry. Now in verse 5, Aholah, Samaria, the northern kingdom, was said to be mine. That means she was married to God. She lusted after her lovers, the Assyrians. These are the same Assyrians that came in and wiped out the northern kingdom, represented by Aholah in 722 B.C., but before that happened, Aholah shacked up, metaphorically speaking, with the Assyrians. When did that happen? Well, Aholah, the northern kingdom under King Menachem, gave to Tiglath-Pileser III, also known as Pul, king of Assyria, 1,000 talents of silver to confirm that Menachem could keep the northern kingdom in his hand. We read that in 2 Kings 15:19. Pul, that's Tiglath-Pileser III, king of Assyria, invaded the land. So Menachem, who ruled between 752 and 742, Menachem gave Pul 75,000 pounds of silver so that Pul would support him to strengthen his grip on the kingdom. 75,000 pounds of silver! She lusted after Assyria, all right. She was willing to pay for what she could get. It really sounds like the Assyrians were the prostitutes. They were the ones collecting the money. Sounds like the northern Israelites were the, whatever you call, the person who pays the prostitute, the John. Sounds like the northern Israelites were the John. But I'm not going to get too hung up on the metaphor here as to who's paying whom, especially since I don't know Hebrew, and the nuances thereof. Now, these Assyrian warriors, they were clothed in blue. The Assyrians were particularly fond of blue. Jameson Fawcett Brown translates it as purple, but I looked at many translations. They all say blue. So, these Assyrians, they were governors, they were commanders, big shots. Handsome young men, mounted horsemen, just the type of person that a young prostitute might lust after because of the money. There were horsemen amongst the Assyrians in verse 6. Israel was always short of horses, and so would be particularly impressed by a nation that had a lot of horses. Now in verse 8, Yahweh refers again back to the prostitution that Aholah began in Egypt when during her youth men slept with her. She was born in Egypt. That's where Israel got started, in Egypt, when she was a slave. And these Egyptians caressed her virgin bosom and poured out their lust upon her. The King James has, the Egyptians bruised the breast of her virginity. Again, what a translation. This is what Clark says about these brutal translations. Quote, the original is still more rough than the translation. I wish I knew Hebrew so I can tell you what the Hebrew says really, literally, but I don't. So Clark continues, the original is still more rough than the translation, and surely there is no need of a comment to explain imagery that is but too generally understood. It is true that there are a few things here in the shade that might be illustrated by anatomy, and it would not be difficult to do it, but they are not necessary to salvation, and I shall not take off the covering. They were sufficiently understood by those for whose use they were originally designed. In other words, Clark saying, there's a lot of talk of body parts by Ezekiel, and I know what the Hebrew says, and I could tell you, but I'm not going to because it's too nasty. In verse 9, God says, because of her lust, she handed Aholah, the northern kingdom, over to her lovers, the Assyrians. And in verse 10, they, the Assyrians, stripped her, Aholah, the northern kingdom, naked. That happened in 722 B.C. when the Assyrians under Sargon II carried off the exiles of the northern kingdom off into Assyria and into Media and into Media, northern Persia. So God handed over Aholah. Now, that's just the culmination of the problems with Assyria, but if you read the history, we first see that the northern kingdom was first handed over to Tiglath-Pileser III, who ruled from 745 to 727, then Shalmaneser V, who ruled from 727 to 722, then Sargon II, who ruled from 722 to 705. Tiglath-Pileser III and Shalmaneser V partially spoiled Aholah. Sargon II completed the rape. Let's read about Tiglath-Pileser III, 2 Kings 15:19. Pul, that's Tiglath-Pileser III, king of Assyria, invaded the land. So Menachem gave Pul 75,000 pounds of silver so that Pul would support him to strengthen his grip on the kingdom. I've read that verse already, and that just shows that that's a handing over to Assyria when you have to pay 75,000 pounds of silver. We drop down 10 verses in 2 Kings 15 to verse 29. In the days of Pekah, that's 740 to 732, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came and captured Ajon, Abel-Beth-Makkah, Yanoah, Kedesh, Hazor, Gilead, and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and deported the people to Israel, and deported the people to Assyria. Now, all those are place names, which I'm sure you don't remember, but when we went over that in 2 Kings, we talked about all of these places. They're in northern Israel. Naphtali was the tribal area up there, just to the west of Lake Hula, which is to the north of the Sea of Galilee, close to Syria. But Assyria came in and captured all those cities. So this is what Ezekiel is referring to, or what God through Ezekiel is referring to. So we've got Tiglath-Pileser coming in twice, once during the reign of Menachem, once during the reign of Pekah, and now we've got Sargon II of Assyria finishing off the siege that Shalmaneser V of Assyria had started. Sargon II finished off that siege in 722 when Shalmaneser V died, and Hoshea is discomfited. 2 Kings 17, 5-6 says this, "Then the king of Assyria invaded the whole land, marched up to Samaria, besieged it for 3 years. In the ninth year of Hoshea ruled from 732 to 722, so 732 minus 9 is 723, 722 roughly. The king of Assyria captured Samaria. He deported the Israelites to Assyria and settled them in Halah by the Habor, Gozan's River, and in the cities of the Medes." Now, in 2 Kings 17:5, the king of Assyria, who invaded Samaria and besieged Samaria, the city, for 3 years, that was Shalmaneser V. He died in 722 during the siege. And so in verse 6, it's a different king of Assyria. The king of Assyria that captured Samaria was Sargon II, who began his reign in 722, the year that northern Israel died. So we see that God is giving a brief summary of the history of the northern kingdom of Israel and Assyria. And he summarizes it this way. "Therefore," verse 9, Ezekiel 23, "therefore I handed her over to her lovers, the Assyrians, for whom she lusted. They stripped her naked, took away her sons and daughters, killed her with the sword. She became a byword among women, and punishment was inflicted on her," all of which I've just described. Now in verse 11, "Aholah's sister Aholibah," that's Judah, southern kingdom, Jerusalem, "saw this, yet in her lust and prostitution she was more depraved than her sister." In other words, she did not take to heart the object lesson that she saw. What happened in 722 and just before then? The Assyrians wiped out the northern kingdom, but the southern kingdom didn't care. The southern kingdom was more depraved. How was she more depraved? Well, let's look at the times of Manasseh, the king of Judah, between 687 and 642. We read in 2 Chronicles 33, verses 2 through 7, "He," that's Manasseh, "did what was evil in the Lord's sight, imitating the detestable practices of the nations that the Lord had dispossessed before the Israelites. Manasseh rebuilt the high places that his father Hezekiah had torn down and reestablished the altars for the Baals. He made Asherah poles, and he worshipped the whole heavenly host and served them. He built altars in the Lord's temple, where Yahweh had said, 'Jerusalem is where my name will remain forever.' Jerusalem is where my name will remain forever. He built altars to the whole heavenly host in both courtyards of the Lord's temple. He passed his sons through the fire in the valley of Hinnom. He practiced witchcraft, divination, and sorcery, and consulted mediums and spiritists. He did a great deal of evil in the Lord's sight, provoking him. Manasseh set up a carved image of the idol he had made in God's temple, about which God had said to David and his son Solomon, 'I will establish my name forever in this temple and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel.'" Can't get much worse than Manasseh. Of course, he came back later and repented. But still, Judah was more depraved than the northern kingdom. And I think that proves it right there, that one passage. At least the northern kingdom, in worshiping golden calves, those golden calves stood for Yahweh. What Manasseh was doing had nothing to do with Yahweh. How about Ahaz? He ruled earlier than Manasseh. Manasseh was 687 to 642. Ahaz is 732 to 716. We read in 2 Chronicles 28, 2 through 3, "Ahaz walked in the ways of the kings of Israel and made cast images of the Baals. He burned incense in the valley of Hinnom and burned his children in the fire." In other words, he was offering up his sons and daughters to Molech, the god to whom sick people sacrificed their children. "Imitating the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had dispossessed before the Israelites." All right, so this more depraved Aholibah, she's more depraved than Aholah. She too lusted after the Assyrians in verse 12. When did she do that? Well, Ahaz did it. Ahaz, remember, ruled from 732 to 716. We read in 2 Kings 16, verses 7 through 9. "So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, 'I am your servant and your son. March up and save me from the power of the king of Aram," that's Syria, "and of the king of Israel." Remember when Syria and the northern kingdom allied themselves against Ahaz. Big battle. Big problem for Ahaz. And so he turns to Assyria. And Ahaz says, Aram and Israel are rising up against me. Ahaz also took the silver and gold found in the Lord's temple and in the treasuries of the king's palace and sent them to the king of Assyria as a gift. So the king of Assyria listened to him and marched up to Damascus and captured it. Damascus, of course, was the capital of Syria. He deported its people to Kir, but put Rezin to death. Rezin was the king of Syria and Damascus, so Assyria did Ahaz's bidding. But, of course, it cost Ahaz a lot of money. That is what is meant in verse 12. She too lusted after the Assyrians. Aholibah, under Ahaz, lusted after the Assyrians and agreed to pay them a bunch of money. And again, the Assyrians were governors, commanders, warriors in full dress, mounted horsemen, all handsome young men, just the type of person a prostitute would like to go after. Verse 13, I saw that she too defiled herself. Too means just like her sister Aholah, the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom, Aholibah, also defiled herself. Both of them, both Aholah and Aholibah, went the same way of idolatry. We go now to Ezekiel 23, verses 14 through 15. But she, this is Aholibah, the southern kingdom, Judah, but she carried her prostitution still farther. She saw men portrayed on a wall, figures of Chaldeans portrayed in red, that's Babylonians, with belts around their waist and flowing turbans on their heads. All of them looked like Babylonian chariot officers, natives of Chaldea. Well, let's briefly take a look at how Aholibah carried her prostitution still further, as Ezekiel 23:14 says. Aholibah started prostituting when she was in Egypt. She prostituted herself with Egypt, and then she prostituted herself with Assyria, which we just talked about. Now it's Babylon's turn. Before we get into that, let's look at what wall is being referred to here. Aholibah saw men portrayed on a wall. Here are a couple of options as to the location of the images which were in Babylon. They could have been in a temple, a pagan temple in Babylon. We recall in Ezekiel 8, verse 10, in one of Ezekiel's visions, he was at the doorway between the outer court and the inner court, and there were rooms there, and he looked in the rooms. Verse 10, Ezekiel 8, he saw every form of creeping thing and beast and detestable things. With all the idols of the house of Israel, they were carved on the wall all around. So maybe that's a reference to that. Or maybe it's just a reference to the wall of a private house or palace where these figures were worshipped as household gods. Barnes says that the monuments of Nineveh, now that's not Babylon now, that's Nineveh in Assyria. The monuments of Nineveh show how the walls of its palaces were adorned with figures precisely answering to this description. There is evidence that these sculptures were highly colored with vermilion, or rather red ochre. But as I said, that's Nineveh in Assyria, not Babylon. However, Ellicott says this, these wall figures were characteristic both of Egypt and Assyria, where stone for sculpture abounded. From the close connection in race and customs between the Assyrians and Babylonians, it cannot be doubted that the same portraitures were also common upon the more perishable brick of the latter, upon the more perishable brick of the Babylonians, of whom the prophet is now speaking. So, Aholibah carries her prostitution further than her lusting after the Assyrians. She's now going after the Babylonians, with their belts and their flowing turbans on their heads, chariot officers, big shots, perfect prey for a prostitute. Now, verse 14 says these figures were portrayed in red that were on the wall. John Gill has a long list of pagan countries who painted their idols red. What were these men that were on the walls dressed in red? Well, Joseph Benson says they were deified heroes of the Babylonians. John Gill says they were images of their heroes who after death were deified, and these being drawn upon the wall with vermilion. Vermilion is red. Benson says, quote, there were deified heroes such as Bel, Nebo, and Merodach. I always thought they were just out-and-out gods, but apparently in Babylonian mythology they were deified heroes. I'm not an expert on that. I'll take Benson's word for it. All right, so Aholibah is now lusting after the Babylonians. We go now to Ezekiel 23, verses 16 through 21. As soon as she saw them, as soon as Aholibah, Judah, saw the Chaldeans, the idols dressed in red on the walls, she lusted after them and sent messengers to them in Chaldea. Then the Babylonians came to her to the bed of love, and in their lust they defiled her. After she had been defiled by them, she turned away from them in disgust. Verse 18, when she carried on her prostitution openly and exposed her nakedness, I turned away from her in disgust, just as I had turned away from her sister. Her sister, of course, is Aholah, the northern kingdom of Israel. God turned away from Aholah when Samaria was destroyed by the Assyrians in 722. Verse 19, Ezekiel 23, yet she, that's Aholibah, Judah, became more and more promiscuous as she recalled the days of her youth, when she was a prostitute in Egypt. There she lusted after her lovers, whose genitals were like those of donkeys, and whose emission was like that of horses. So you longed for the lewdness of your youth, when in Egypt your bosom was caressed and your young breast fondled. All right, there's a lot of history that's being referred to here, and so I'm going to take us through it. First of all, in verse 16, Aholibah, Judah, saw the Babylonians and lusted after them and sent messengers to the Babylonians in Chaldea. That probably occurred when Judah wanted a Babylonian alliance after the Battle of Carchemish in 605. Now, to give us some background, Jehoiakim, king of Judah, was king in 609 down to 597. He became king when his father Josiah got killed by Necho II of Egypt in 609 at Megiddo. Let's read about that in 2 Kings 23, 29 through 34. During his reign, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, marched up to help the king of Assyria at the Euphrates River. That's in 609, the Battle of Haran. Necho was going up there to help the Assyrians against the Babylonians. At that time, King Josiah, he ruled from 640 to 609, he went to confront King Necho, and at Megiddo, when Necho saw him, killed Josiah. Verse 30, then the common people took Jehoahaz, he reigned for 3 months in 609, Jehoahaz, son of Josiah, anointed him and made him king in place of his father. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. Verse 33, Pharaoh Necho imprisoned Jehoahaz at Riblah in the land of Hamath to keep him from reigning in Jerusalem, and he imposed on the land a fine of 7,500 pounds of silver and 75 pounds of gold. Then Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, that's our Jehoiakim, 609 to 597, Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king in place of his father Josiah, and changed Eliakim's name to Jehoiakim. Necho took Jehoahaz and went to Egypt, and Jehoahaz died in Egypt. All right, so we've got Jehoiakim is ruling in 609. He is, of course, by necessity, allied with Egypt. But then in 605, the Babylonians defeated Egypt at the Battle of Carchemish up in Syria on the Euphrates River, and Necho hightails it back to Egypt. And so now Jehoiakim is in love with the Babylonians. We read that in 2 Kings 24:1, during Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, attacked. That would be in 605 after he came down from Carchemish. Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years. That's from 605 to 602. And then in 601, he turned and rebelled against Babylon. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown summarized this, saying that Jehoiakim, probably by a stipulation of tribute, enlisted Nebuchadnezzar against Pharaoh. That was in 605, whose tributary he previously had been. Failing to keep his stipulation with Nebuchadnezzar, Jehoiakim brought on himself Nebuchadnezzar's vengeance. And that happened in 601. So this tracks very well with the history, our passage in Ezekiel. So let's back up and look at it again. Verse 16 says, as soon as she, Aholibah, Judah, saw the Babylonians, she lusted after them. That was in 605. She sent messengers to them in Chaldea, saying, well, pay you tribute. Happened for 3 years, and the Babylonians came to her in the bed of love, and in their lust they defiled her. So the Babylonians and the Jews of Judah were in alliance for 3 years. After she had been defiled by them, 602, she turned away from them in disgust. She, Aholibah, southern Judah, turned away from the Babylonians in disgust. That was in 601 when Jehoiakim quit paying tribute to Babylon. Now, of course, what happened after that is Nebuchadnezzar came against Judah again because of that sometime between 601 and 598 and carried off Ezekiel as well as a bunch of other Jews in 597 in captivity to Babylon. Verse 18, when she, that's Aholibah, carried on her prostitution openly with the Babylonians, I turned away from her in disgust. That happened, as I just said, when Nebuchadnezzar came against Jehoiakim in between 601 and 598. We'll read about that in 2 Kings 24:2. The Lord sent Chaldean, Aramean, Moabite, and Ammonite raiders. All of these peoples are constituent parts of the Babylonian Empire. The Lord sent these raiders against Jehoiakim. He sent them against Judah to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord. He had spoken through his servants, the prophets. And as I said, that happened between 601 and 598. Now, I mentioned in verse 17 that Aholibah turned away from the Babylonians in disgust. That was probably 601. It might also refer to Zedekiah turning away from the Babylonians in disgust and seeking another alliance with Egypt. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, but let's look at that. First of all, when Jehoiakim turned against the Babylonians, that's recorded in 2 Kings 24, verse 1. During Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, attacked. Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years. All right, that's between 605 and 602. The attack came after the Battle of Carchemish that Nebuchadnezzar had just won. And then he, that's Jehoiakim, turned and rebelled. That happened in 601 against Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, so that's one turning away in disgust from the Babylonians that Aholibah did. Here's another one, though, in 2 Kings 24:20. Because of the Lord's anger, it came to the point in Jerusalem and Judah that he, God, finally banished them from his presence. Then Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. That, of course, is when Zedekiah went down to Egypt to get some alliance. In fact, Egypt under Pharaoh Hophra actually came up to help Zedekiah in the final siege of Jerusalem, which occurred in 588, started and finished in 586. The Babylonians had to cease their siege temporarily in order to deal with the Egyptians. So Zedekiah, who had been in alliance with Babylon, rebelled against Babylon and went back to Egypt. So there was two times that Aholibah had turned away from Babylon in disgust. I think in verse 17, the first turning away was in 601 when Jehoiakim renounced his allegiance with Babylon. And then God turns away in verse 18 in disgust from Aholibah, just as a lawful husband would turn away from his wife when he found out that she'd been catting around on him. And then in verse 19, she became more and more promiscuous. She recalled the days of her youth when she was a prostitute in Egypt. So this now in verse 19 is recurring when Zedekiah turned away from Babylon, went down to Egypt, and that, of course, probably provoked Nebuchadnezzar to come back in 588. He's probably pretty ticked off by now, and he burns Jerusalem to the ground in 586. So now let's look at verse 19 as Aholibah recalls the days of her youth when she was a prostitute in Egypt. As I said earlier, Zedekiah had gone down to Egypt for help and assistance. That's how Aholibah is recalling the prostitution of her youth. Zedekiah is going back to the pagan nation of Egypt, Ezekiel 17:15. However, this king, that's Zedekiah, who ruled from 597 to 586, Zedekiah revolted against Nebuchadnezzar by sending Zedekiah's ambassadors to Egypt so they might give him horses and a large army. Will he flourish? Will the one who does such things escape? Can he break a covenant and still escape the covenant with Nebuchadnezzar? The answer to that is no, he cannot, and he did not. He was blinded and taken off to Babylon in 586. So in Ezekiel 23:19, Aholibah is more promiscuous. Zedekiah goes back to Egypt. Going back to Egypt seems to be a theme in the Old Testament. That's something you don't want to do, like Keith Green used to sing, so you want to go back to Egypt when you were safe and secure. Now, Yahweh, speaking through Ezekiel, recalls the days of Aholibah's youth when she was prostituting herself and worshiping idols. And Ezekiel graphically describes it. There in Egypt, she lusted after her lovers whose genitals were like those of donkeys. As one of my commentators says, donkeys apparently have especially large penises. Well, I'm not a farmer. I never have noticed how large a donkey's penis was, so I will take his word for it. I do not know why Ezekiel has to put this in the Bible. It means that Ezekiel chapter 23 is never taught in Sunday school. Well, I think Ezekiel is making fun of Aholibah. She lusted so bad she wanted an idol that was well hung like a donkey. And her lover's emission was like that of horses. Emission means the stream of semen upon ejaculation that a horse manages to produce. Again, really, Ezekiel, did you have to put that in the Bible? But again, it's just making a mockery of Aholibah, Judah, lusting after these stupid Egyptians. Verse 21, so you longed for the lewdness of your youth, says Yahweh, when in Egypt your bosom was caressed and your young breast fondled. Some more sexually explicit language. We go now to Ezekiel 23, verses 22 through 23, and we will finish this audio. Therefore, Oholibah, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I will stir up your lovers against you. Now remember, Oholibah is southern Judah. Those you turned away from in disgust, that would be the Babylonians, and I will bring them against you from every side. And that happened in 588 and was finished in 586 with the burning down of the city of Jerusalem. These lovers are mentioned in verse 23. We could just summarize verse 23 and say the Babylonians, but unfortunately Ezekiel lists a bunch of people that we need to look at here. The Babylonians, the lovers that Oholibah had spurned, the Babylonians and all the Chaldeans. I thought that Chaldeans was just another word for Babylonians. The men of Pekod and Shoah and Koah and all the Assyrians. I thought the Assyrians had disappeared in 605 at the Battle of Carchemish, and now we're talking about something that's happening in 586, a good deal later. So we need to explain that. And then let's finish up verse 23. All the Assyrians with them, handsome young men, all of them governors and commanders, chariot officers and men of high rank, all mounted on horses. In other words, the cream of the nations coming after Judah. So kiss it goodbye, Oholibah, you're toast. Now, first of all, why would the Chaldeans and the Assyrians be mentioned along with the Babylonians as if they were different people? As I said, Chaldeans are usually a synonym for Babylonians. Why mention them separately? And the Assyrian Empire had earlier died in 605. Well, here's the answer. This is from Joseph Benson. The inhabitants of the several provinces of the Babylonish monarchy, for most of the ancients, understood these words as names of places. So these are place names. I think Chaldea was at the southern end of the Mesopotamian Valley. The Babylonians were sort of in the middle. The Assyrians, that would be further to the north of Babylon as you head up towards Syria. So I think geography explains that. Now, there's also a reference to the men of Pekod, Shoah, and Koah. Now, commentators are not clear as to what these three words refer to. I've actually got five options, so let's run through them. First option, these three are small Chaldean tribes. As Barnes puts it, possibly words expressive of small Chaldean tribes selected for their resemblance to expressive Hebrew words. In other words, the Hebrew there sounded similar to the geographical or the clan names of these tribes. That's option number one. Option number two, Pekod, Shoah, and Koah are three geographical areas in Babylon. That's Gill, Poole, and Benson's view, or at least they mention that as a possibility. Adam Clark, as an option, suggests that maybe these three names refer to peoples bordering Babylonia. Here's what Clark says. These names have been thought to designate certain people bordering on the Chaldeans, but no geographer has ever been able to find them out. It was just a speculation. Option number four, Pekod, Shoah, and Koah are the names of Babylonian officers. The officers would be rulers, lords, and nobles. Barnes says these words are possibly words expressive of rank. Apparently the Hebrew is hard to translate. That's option number four. Here's option number five. This is from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. Pekod, Shoah, and Koah are three adjectives describing Babylon. Pekod means visitation. In other words, judgment. Babylon was the land of judgment two ways. Actively, it was carrying out judgment on Judah, and passively, it was to receive judgment from God through the agency of the Persians in 539 when Cyrus the Great beat them. So Pekod means visitation, Shoah means rich, and Koah means noble, and that's Babylon. Who knows? Doesn't matter. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finished the first portion of Ezekiel 23. We are now ready to go to the second portion of chapter 23 of Ezekiel, which I will entitle Two Prostitutes Named Ahola and Oholibah, Part B. We'll finish it up next time. I hope you stay with me for that, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.